Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Each Wednesday for the past couple of months, we've been gathering for voter roundtables to hear Americans, to really listen to them talk through the issues that matter most in this election. And today, we are focusing on the defining issue of 2020, the thing that has changed so much of American life, the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm joined today by three people who have suffered deeply and directly from the virus. First, let's say hello to Dave Dahlstrom. He joins us from Goodyear, Arizona. He is a former Air Force Communications Systems Officer. Dave, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. How are you today?
I'm doing well. We're also joined by Denise Carr. She's an art teacher and yoga instructor from Buffalo, New York. Denise, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you for having me on the show today.
And Loopy Harpster joins us from Flat Rock, Michigan. She is a restaurant owner. Loopy, welcome to you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You know, we have asked everyday Americans over the past several months in each of these roundtables to trust us and to make themselves vulnerable. And I've been so grateful to everyone who's joined us, but the three of you especially, especially. So I want to start by extending my gratitude to the three of you, because this is big. So, Dave, can we just start with you? Can you tell us about Cindy?
Sure. Cindy, my wife of 39 years, was a very accomplished woman. She, we have two kids. They're 34 and 29, and two grandchildren. So she was very proud of her grandkids, of course, like anybody else. She worked for the Department of Defense and the Office of the Secretary of Defense's Health Affairs Office, where she was a TRICARE primary contracting officer for quite a few years. And she retired in 2004. Shortly thereafter, we moved to Arizona from Colorado, and she enjoyed her retirement out here. I think the biggest part of her life at that point was working at Grateful Hearts, which was like a food kitchen for homeless people. And this was her passion, was to take care of people. She was very giving, exceptionally giving woman.
And unfortunately, we have to use the past tense now, right?
Yes, we do.
So what happened?
Well, so in mid-June, my daughter and her husband were moving from North Carolina to Montana. They're a military family, and I flew out to North Carolina to help my daughter and the two boys move to Montana while her husband went directly to Montana. So we're going to go through Denver to see our best friends. And that's where my daughter pretty much grew up too, so she could show off her babies, right? So my daughter was very opposed to my wife coming, so she did not come. And the reason was is COVID. So my wife decided sort of at the last minute, and I actually approved of it, was that she would get on a plane and fly up to Denver. We didn't really think it would be that big a deal. You know, she would take exceptional safety precautions, which is the way she lived her life anyway. So we just didn't think it would be that big a deal. So on June 22nd, she got on a plane and flew up to Denver. And shortly thereafter, she started not feeling well. We hadn't even made it to Denver yet. And a couple of days later, she flew home really sick, thinking she just had altitude sickness. She then quickly went to the urgent care the next day, and then the following day, I think it was Saturday, that was Friday, actually. So Friday, and then on Saturday, I wasn't even in Arizona yet. She was admitted to the hospital already and ventilated, and on July 6th, she passed away in the hospital, where I was actually at first not allowed to go in. But they did, I kind of put a little bit of a fit up, and they did allow me to come in, and, they really made sure I was very safe, and I was allowed to hold her hand for a few minutes. They pulled the ventilator, and she passed away very quickly after that. And her underlying condition was a thing called Valley Fever, and it's an Arizona thing. There's, spores out in the air out here, and in her case, it was likely a cotton spores because we live out or in the cotton fields. And she also had diabetes, but they said that really wasn't the problem so much as the lung damage that she incurred. So when she got the COVID pneumonia, it quickly became, SARS, right? That acute respiratory syndrome. Yeah. So that was it. That really took a toll on her. And it was very fast, 15 days total.
15 days.
Mm-hmm.
I am so sorry.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of those moments for all three of you that no matter what I say, it's going to feel trite. So I just want to apologize in advance. But it must have been, is it still a shock, Dave?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's absolutely shock. And it's not just a shock to me. It's a shock to literally everyone, because she was actually a pretty healthy, you know, 70-year-old. She looked great. You know, people have seen pictures of her on the internet. You know, it's just really kind of shocking. And I mean, gosh, I have doctors that didn't even know people that passed away yet, you know, and friends, and it hit really, really hard, because out here in Goodyear, Arizona, I mean, especially back in June, and I know Arizona was ramping up their cases, but that was more of a East Valley thing, and we're in the far West Valley. And I think we had one case of someone dying at the time in like a really old folks home, you know, like a whatever you call those assisted living facilities. So for this to happen with Cindy was just absolutely just shocking. It was and terrifying too, because just nobody knew anybody. I literally didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
And neither did any of my friends, anybody. And so that's the common theme is like, oh my God, this is real. And this has now affected somebody in my life.
How long were you allowed to be with her before she passed away?
It was just a few minutes. Right. I mean, I could have stayed with her for a little longer, but to be honest with you, at that point I thought, man, this is probably just not such a good idea. So I asked the nurse, would it be better for me to stay or go? And she's like, well, I mean, the longer you're in here, the longer you're at risk. So it was just a few minutes. I walked in, held her hand, you know, they didn't want me to get near her face or anything like that. And that was it. And so, you know, I kind of followed the instructions of the nursing staff there and got out there. And then when I got home, you know, I had to take off all my clothes and her purse and everything. I just took everything off and threw it right in the trash can.
Was she conscious at that time?
Oh, no. I had last heard from her on Saturday just before she was ventilated. I think it was kind of early in the morning. I actually have the text message and it was just gobbledygook. So you know, I know at that point she was not well, and my son and I were in Tennessee coming back. So at that point, so we got back Saturday night. And of course, Saturday night, you know, we got home late, got up Sunday. They wouldn't even let me in the hospital, anything. So at that point, you know, there was no contact.
Do you mind if I ask, did you tell her anything when you were holding her?
Well, of course. Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, you have that kind of a relationship, whether it's a long time or a short time, you love the person that you love. And I told her that I loved her, and that her grandchildren loved her, and that her children loved her, and that her friends and family and this vast community of people loved her. You know, and that was pretty much it. I mean, it was really quick. You know, I just said, I'm going to miss you and I'll see you on the other side kind of thing. And that was the end. Yeah. That was it.
Well, I'm going to go slow this hour, okay? Mm-hmm. So Denise and Lupi, I'm so grateful that you're listening along and that we're all going to listen to each other. So, Dave, thank you for that a lot.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Lupi, can I turn to you?
And, sure.
So you got sick yourself, right?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
Well, my grandson had been home from school because of the school closings, and he pretty much lives with us, and he'd been sick a couple of days, lethargic, headache. So I, you know, went to work as usual, and the restaurants had closed at that time. They closed down the restaurants, but we were still open for carryout, so I was dealing with that. And I had worked all day one day, and I came home the next day, and I was tired. Had a headache. The next day, pretty much the same thing. This went on for several days. I called several different agencies in the area, COVID hotlines, and no, you don't, you're not sick. You just have the flu, which is what I thought I had. And I didn't go to work. So then on April 1st, my sister, who was in the hospital with the COVID, I didn't know, called me and told me to go to the hospital and that it was going to turn on me quickly. And at that point, I was like, well, okay. So I went to the hospital. They admitted me. I said goodbye to my husband. They wouldn't allow him in. And I pretty much don't remember very much after that. I don't know what happened from me getting to the hospital to being there. But I do remember them saying, we're going to put you on a ventilator. We may have to put in a trach. And I thought, no trach. I remember that. Mm. And then I remember thinking, I'm not going to live. I'm not leaving this place. And I do remember at that time saying goodbye to a couple of my friends. I texted them and told them I wasn't leaving. I didn't think so. And actually, at one point, I decided I was just going to give in. I was just going to go ahead and die. And then I had talked to my grandson, who told me to fight it and to please come home. So I decided at that time to go ahead and to fight it. So I remember waking up, being taken off the ventilator, being in a room and wondering why I was in this hotel room and what was going on. And people would come in all in these garb, like spacesuits, and a couple of times a day and leave. And I'd be laying there and wondering what's going on. Why am I here? And I think I'm just going to go home. I kept thinking, I'm going home today. And then I would lay back down or try to get up and say, nope, I'll rest a little longer. Hmm. So then I couldn't speak. I lost my voice. It's still not quite there.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Oh, just, I'm sorry to interrupt, Loopy. I just have to take a little bit of a break here, and I want to hear the rest of your story when we come back. We're talking with three Americans who have suffered profoundly due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Loopy Harpster is with us from Michigan. Denise Carr, who we'll hear from in a few minutes, is with us from Buffalo, New York, and Dave Dahlstrom in Goodyear, Arizona. It's our weekly voter roundtable. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Every Wednesday, we've been having voter roundtables in this election season, focusing on the issues that matter to Americans. And today we are talking about the big one, about the COVID-19 pandemic that has transformed so much of American lives, and particularly directly the three people who join us today for our roundtable. Dave Dahlstrom is with us from Goodyear, Arizona. His wife, Cindy, died in July due to COVID. Denise Carr is with us from Buffalo, New York. She's going to tell us in a few minutes about how COVID has had an impact on her life and her family. And Loopy Harpster is with us from Flat Rock, Michigan. And Loopy was hospitalized very quickly after coming down with COVID symptoms. In April. And Loopy, how long were you on the ventilator?
I was on the ventilator 10 days and in the hospital, a total of 28.
28 days in the hospital.
Yes.
And you were saying that when they took out the ventilator and you regained consciousness, it took you a while to figure out sort of where you were and what was happening?
Yes, I was confused, I guess, was just typical.
So tell me. Go ahead. No, you please go ahead. I was just going to say, tell me more about that time before you got to go home.
Well, yeah, I hear people who talk about being in the hospital and how they couldn't see anyone. In all honesty, that wasn't an issue with me. Mm-hmm. I was too weak to even sit up or let alone talk or even watch TV. I was too weak to do any of those things. They did want to put me in rehab a couple of weeks also because they didn't offer that in the hospitals while you're recuperating. So I begged my husband to bring me home and my sister, who was the nurse, and they did. Otherwise, I'd have been in the hospital or rehab another few more weeks. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like, from what you described, this happened really fast.
Well, I mean, I guess I didn't know what was happening. I didn't have a breathing issue, and so I didn't think I had COVID. I was just tired and achy, and so. But yeah, I mean, I guess.
And how have you been doing since then?
Well, coming out of the hospital was quite strange. First of all, this had been going on while I was in the hospital, and I ended up in my bed for several weeks, and so when I did finally get out, my restaurants, one had failed, and one was failing, the second one, and my husband was doing what he could to keep them going, and during my recovery, while I was in bed, I wasn't supposed to be working, but I was doing what I could. Contacted the bank to get the PPP loan that the government had offered, which honestly saved my second business. It didn't save my first one. So being weak and trying to work and trying to get my businesses recovered remotely is what I was doing. And honestly, the first time I got out, I went to Lowe's to look for something to work on one of the businesses, and it was so surreal. The way life had turned, I hadn't been out in a couple of months, and it was odd. It was very strange driving and looking at everything that was going on. But
everything that was going on, meaning all the places closed down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Traffic and just, it was like a sci-fi type movie walking out like that, because I just all of a sudden it hit me like other people. It was kind of a gradual thing where they saw it and I hadn't seen it until then.
Mm. Wow. Well, Lupi, thank you for sharing that story. I'm going to take a deep breath a lot this hour. The three of you are stronger than I am. Denise, do you want to tell us about your father?
Sure. But first I'd like to say, Dave, I'm so very sorry for the loss of your wife. And Lupi, I hope that you have a full recovery. And I'm so sorry about your restaurant. Mm-hmm. Yes. I thought I wasn't really getting very emotional, but it seems to be happening. So my father was just a really great, regular guy. He was a dad of seven kids. I'm the oldest. We had a really great relationship. He just had the best smile. He was just a really, just a great, kind person. So he had been battling with multiple myeloma for several years, about 7 years. So he was off of any treatment for a long time, and was, it was never going to go away, but it wasn't very active. So he was relatively okay. About late February, early March, he needed to start chemotherapy again, which, as you know, seriously compromises your immune system. And he became very ill really suddenly. And we didn't initially think anything about it. He had a loss of taste. And then he had some weakness, muscle weakness and difficulty breathing, which wasn't something that he had been experiencing before. He woke up on a Friday morning couldn't breathe. My stepmother called for an ambulance. They came and took him to the hospital and had to intubate him pretty much directly. And he was on a ventilator for 5 days. We were not allowed to go to the hospital. We were not able to even see each other. We were pretty much in full lockdown here in Buffalo. So that was really difficult. A couple nights after he had been there, he suffered a series of strokes, which pretty much made recovery impossible for him. Mm-hmm. So we made the decision to take him off of the ventilator. And at that point, somehow my stepmother, I don't know how she did it, talked the hospital into letting us, my siblings and her, come in to say goodbye. He wasn't conscious, obviously. And it was literally a minute that we could be in the room. We couldn't be in the room together. It was very separate and we had to keep our distance. But at least we could say goodbye. So he passed away on April 14th.
What was your dad's name, Denise?
Clifford Myers.
Okay. My aunt had multiple myeloma. It's a very challenging disease, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then this happened. I mean, I am so sorry, first of all. And how has your family, what's the impact been on your family?
It's been really hard, I think. You know, because he had been sick for a long time, we all sort of knew that he wasn't going to be here forever, you know, but having it go this way was just sudden and just not being able to really have a service for him or to see him, you know, to know that he was there alone. That was, I think, the hardest part for all of us. You know, that I just don't want him to be part of a statistic, you know?
Tell me more about what you mean by that.
Well, I guess right now we're up to, 219,000 people in the United States have died. And I feel like we need to say their names. We need to recognize them. They all belong to someone. You know, they all have people who love them. And, you know, I just feel like it's getting lost in the magnitude of people.
Yeah, I get what you mean. The numbers are huge, and because they're so huge, sometimes they can stop making sense. But that's why we're so grateful that the three of you are willing to help us ground people who are listening in the reality of what this pandemic is. So here's the question. And again, thank you to the three of you for being brave for all of us.
No problem.
So here's the question. What kind of leader do you believe can lead the nation out of this pandemic? And Dave, I'll start with you and I'll hear from all three of you, and then just, you know, feel free to talk with each other. But Dave, what kind of leader can get us through this?
Well, I think right now, we need calm in this country. You know, we're really divided, and as a country, we need to come together to get through this type of a problem. I mean, this is an epically World War II level almost kind of issue. And so you need to have a leader that's going to inspire everyone to work towards some common goals, of which I just don't feel, you know, the current president has done as it pertains to COVID, you know. So I'm going to give Joe Biden a shot to do that. You know, I mean, Joe Biden's been around a long time, so we really know who he is. We'll know he'll listen to science and things like that. But ultimately, I think it's going to take the American people to get past what has happened in the last 6-7 months. And we're going to just have to start thinking about each other. Mm-hmm. And that's going to take a leader that's going to unify the country. And I hope Joe Biden can do that. I don't know if he can or he can't, but I believe that he can.
And you voted for President Trump in 2016.
Yes, I did. Absolutely.
Okay. We'll come back to your thinking in a minute here, but mm-hmm. but Lupi, what kind of leader do you think or want us to get through this?
Well, I agree completely with Dave on the calm, that we need to stay calm during this, and I think I've seen a lot of people who are trying to keep us calm. Divided, yes, I've seen over the last few administrations, I feel that division has not been something that's been done, or that's been done. We've been so separated. It makes me sad to see that this is going on. I did vote for Trump, and I will vote for him again. I feel like we need a strong leader, and I feel like he's strong. That's my thoughts on
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm. And Denise, what kind of leader do we need right now?
I think it's super important to have a leader that has empathy and care for others. Someone who will surround themselves with experts in their field, that we can't get lost in the difference of our own opinions versus science and fact, and someone that will listen to true science and fact and make decisions with the people around them to move us forward and keep us healthy and safe. And I also totally agree with the division. It is so difficult to have conversations with almost anyone now without it getting heated or emotional or sometimes nasty, you know? And I think to have a leader that is a calming force, who truly cares about people, who doesn't live in a vacuum, you know, that personal growth isn't possible if you live in a vacuum. The same is true for a society. So the ability to listen to others and have a civil discourse and change your mind or opinion, given new information, I think is really important.
Mm-hmm. So calm, strength, empathy, care. I mean, really, all three of you are asking for a model that the rest of us can follow and should follow as a country that needs to come together to beat this pandemic. So we got about three minutes before we have to take our next break. And I don't really want to kind of get in between the three of you anymore. But I'm just wondering if you have questions for each other or, you know, when it sounds like there's similar values here at the table, why the three of you think differently about who can bring those values to light most powerfully as president. So, I mean, Dave, do you want to talk with Denise and Lupi and just all three of you jump in here?
Well, from Denise's perspective, she's a yoga teacher and I'm a yogi, and I actually, my housemate now is a yoga teacher. So I literally understand exactly where she comes from. And this young lady is one of my best friends, and she has helped me to kind of resolve my feelings towards, President Trump and stuff. And so I started to really look at my vote for this year months before anything happened to my wife. You know, I was really starting to have a critical eye towards the president. And so, Denise, I would ask you, you know, how have you felt about President Trump and his leadership specifically, you know, especially in the beginning of this or even before this?
Well, I did not vote for President Trump in the last election, and I will not be voting for him again in this election. And for me, I think it's really difficult to separate his personal behavior and the way that he conducts himself with who he is as the president of the United States. And so much of what he says and the combativeness of his approach really rails against my own personal beliefs. And yes, it comes back to those principles of yogic philosophy, you know, that I just feel that you have to have compassion for other people, and you have to live your life with kindness and empathy for others. And I just feel like that is not present currently. And it's a time when, if we really truly want as a country to come together, we need that in a leader. It needs to be modeled from the very top. And I just don't see that happening.
So I'll step in. And that is, I agree with both of you in that respect. But coming from the business world, I also feel like we need somebody who has business sense, which I feel he does. And I know that some people feel he's a stupid person. And I tell myself, how does a man that is stupid get to where he is? And I don't always agree with the way he communicates, that's for sure. But I feel like he gets the job done.
Well, Loopy, Denise, and David, hang on here. One more quick break and we'll come back and keep talking. Keep listening to three Americans who have been directly impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. It's our weekly voter roundtable. We'll have a lot more when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Every Wednesday, we do a weekly voter roundtable in this election season to listen to Americans talk through the issues that matter most to them. Next week, it's going to be our final voter roundtable, and we will be talking with people from North Carolina, another one of those key states that one of the gatekeepers to the path to presidential victory. So if you are listening from North Carolina, who are you going to vote for or have already voted for? What does your state need? What does your family need? What are your hopes and dreams for the next 4 years for this country? Share your thoughts with us and your story at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. And one more quick thing. Since we've been doing these voter roundtables every week, we at On Point feel like we've learned a lot, actually, about what's on Americans' minds. And if you've been a regular On Point listener to these roundtables, call us also and tell us what you've learned or sort of your thoughts and reflections about listening to folks talk with each other in this monumental year of ours. So that number, to share your thoughts about that, again, 617-353-0683. And today we are speaking about the biggest issue of 2020, about the COVID-19 pandemic. And we are talking with three people who have suffered personally and profoundly due to the pandemic. Dave Dahlstrom is with us from Goodyear, Arizona. His wife, Cindy, died due to COVID in July. Denise Carr is with us from Buffalo, New York. Her father, Clifford, died to COVID in April. And Loopy Harpster joins us from Flat Rock, Michigan. She was in the hospital for almost all of April due to COVID, on a ventilator for 10 days as well, has lost one of her restaurant businesses in the pandemic as well. Now, Loopy, I just have a quick question for you. And then again, I'd love to hear the three of you sort of, you know, just chat, talk with each other about what you think. Because, Loopy, you said that you want a leader with strength. to lead us right now. And you believe that President Trump is that person. So what exactly does he model, or how does he model the kind of strength you're looking for as a leader?
Well, I think he is direct. And honestly, I feel like some in the business world, sometimes you have to be direct. I call it being political when there are politicians and the way they speak to each other. And I know that in certain worlds that's admired. And like I said, I don't always like the way Trump comes off. And I think sometimes he just says things that other people are thinking and want to say. Again, it's not politically correct necessarily, but I do feel that he has gotten quite a bit done in his personal life and as a president. And that's where I see the strength from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to jump in on that, if I may.
Please, go ahead.
So I think Loopy is pointing out an important thing about President Trump. And mark it that I've already actually voted, and I did in fact vote for Joe Biden. My ballot's in. But she's right. You know, President Trump has accomplished a tremendous amount in the 4 years he's been in office, beside all of the craziness. And so I really appreciate his ability to get things done. And I think that goes to being a decision maker. He can make decisions, and I'm not saying all of his decisions are right. But they have made a big difference in this country. This is just where I just don't think he did a good job with COVID. I just don't think he brought that decision-making ability to this problem, especially in the beginning. And, you know, it's probably because he was worried about the economic successes that he had. But I think right now everything is in place. And so although I would trust President Trump to recover the economy more than I would Joe Biden, I think the economy will recover itself regardless. I don't think Joe Biden can come in there and make massive changes to affect the things that are going to make the economy better and probably quickly as well, too. So I do appreciate some of the things that President Trump's done. I'm still a moderate Republican, but ultimately we can't have somebody in there that just does. You know, this recent retweet about SEAL Team 6 being killed and Osama bin Laden being living somewhere out here in the West Valley of Phoenix where I live. You know, I mean, it's just that's not very presidential, and it's really bad. And I can't look past stuff like that, regardless of the good things that he's done. So that's kind of where I feel.
Yeah. So I'm going to put a fine point on something here, and the three of you feel free to respond however you want. But a president's primary duty, I would say above all, is the protection of the American people, right?
Absolutely.
And what we have in this case, I think it's fair to say we know, because he himself has told us through those tapes from Bob Woodward, that in January and February, he clearly heard from his medical advisors and national security team that this pandemic was going to be the biggest, most important, and most difficult challenge the nation is going to face. Number one is what Robert O'Brien told him. And yet, in the early days, we have a president who then went on and didn't communicate that same sense of urgency to the American people, didn't take the steps that he had available to him as president to protect the American people. And it just breaks my heart so much, because the three of you have directly suffered because of that. You've experienced heartbreaking losses. This did not have to happen. I think that's why this election is so much a referendum on the president's leadership this year. I hear what you're saying about the past 4 years, but it's this year where people's lives were lost that I think people are voting on in a big way. And I kind of want to hear you guys. Denise, I mean, what do you think about that?
I have a lot to say about that, actually. I think that the federal government's response has been to this pandemic has been extremely disappointing. I think there was a lot that could have happened early on for federal government officials, President Trump in particular, to encourage mask wearing, which we know works, to encourage social distancing, and for asking people to stay home. I mean, I live in an area where we were a hotspot in March and April, and we did all of the things, and now we have our percent is like below 1%. We're one of the lowest places in the country, and people really followed those guidelines. And I feel like if that had happened nationally, we would all be in a good place right now. And I feel still that there is no national plan, that there is no federal leadership. It's just like we're pretending it doesn't exist anymore. And I find that to be a grievous mistake. It's still costing people their lives every day.
Loopy, what do you think?
Well, I can tell you that despite being a COVID survivor, and quite honestly, what I've gone through is nothing like what Dave and Denise have gone through. I don't feel. They lost someone. I survived. I don't know anyone who has died personally. And honestly, that's what a lot of people around me, I see hundreds of people sometimes daily. And the people don't see it because, I mean, I've been told multiple times, I'm the only person they know who's had it. And like I said, I don't know anyone who's died from it personally. And so I think that's why some people don't believe it's real. It is real. Don't get me wrong. It is real. I do feel that our governors, and that especially here in Michigan, have tried to do things to help curb this, closing down the businesses, enforcing mandates. I think it's a lot of people who don't follow those. I don't believe that the governor or any federal governor can control the people. They're traveling, they're going to places without quarantining. And honestly, I feel like if you're going to get the COVID, you're going to get the COVID. Wearing the mask isn't necessarily going to prevent you from getting it. I think some of us are just very susceptible to it. And as for things not getting done early on, there were things that were tried to be done early on. And there was quite a lot of, differences in our government that kind of prevented some of that. I know people believe that the president pulled people out of China unnecessarily, when there's a lot more to that story than just, hey, he pulled them out. That's really not necessarily what happened. He didn't just pull them out. So, like I said, in my world, from what I see, and I talk to a lot of medical people also, and they just feel that, honestly, that you're going to get it, you're going to get it, and wearing the mask isn't going to prevent you from getting it.
Medical people are telling you that, Loopy?
Yes, yes. I know somebody from a major hospital here in Michigan, and she told me recently, she said, you know, she goes, I wish they would tell you how many people are dying from it. And not only that, they didn't know how to treat it in the beginning when I was in the hospital. And they know so much more now. All the doctors, they just didn't know what to do and how to treat it.
It was a new virus, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But what we know from countries that have successfully tamped down the pandemic, that mask wearing and social distancing and the new therapeutics and contact tracing and testing, all of these things, including mask wearing, can control this pandemic. So it's interesting that medical folks are telling you that. But Dave, I know you want to jump in here, but go ahead.
Because I wanted to comment on Loopy's comment, which is about mask wearing. Loopy is absolutely right when she said wearing this mask is not going to keep you from getting it. Because the vast majority of these transmissions, including my wife, occur through the eye, right? That's where it's happening. You know, very few transmissions occur through the mouth. Very few transmissions occur through the nose. It has to do with touching your eye. And this is why mask wearing is really important. Okay. It's because when someone's not wearing a mask and they sneeze or cough or blow a booger out or whatever, they now allow the COVID that may be in them to exit their body and to land on something. And then someone who's wearing a mask, like Cindy, comes by, touches it, and then rubs her eye, and then you get it. So mask wearing is critically important to stop the spread, but mask wearing is not going to keep you from getting it.
Right, but it'll keep other people safe if you have it.
Absolutely, but we don't say it that way.
Right.
So and I think it makes a mistake when we don't say it. It's about protecting others. It's not about protecting yourself.
So can we talk about that
can
a little?
Can I jump in on that?
Yeah, no, go ahead, Denise. Okay. Yeah, please, no, go ahead, Denise.
I think that's the point that's been lost this whole time, is that the mask wearing is not about you. It's about everyone else, that it is about your care for protecting others. And I think if it was framed that way, everyone, of course, would want to feel that they're protecting other people. So, Dave, I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah. And this is one of President Trump's issues that I had way back in the beginning of this, long before Cindy got this disease. You know, he refused to wear masks. He, as the president of the United States, should have been saying exactly about that. Why are we wearing masks? Explain this to people. But he didn't want to wear a mask. He was too arrogant or selfish or whatever. I just didn't see that coming from him. And, you know, and I don't blame him for COVID. I blame the Chinese 1,000% in every respect. I blame the Chinese. But the president of the United States has a responsibility as the commander in chief, as our chief medical officer, as our chief diplomat, as our chief of everything, to ensure the safety of the American people. And that was a big, you know, well, it still is, right? He still won't wear his mask. He was just in Prescott, and they just showed hundreds, if not thousands, of people, including the president, not wearing masks. Mm.
We have fast run out of time with the three of you, and you've been so generous with your thoughts and sharing your lives with us. I'm wondering if in, like, just a few sentences, the three of you can tell us what your hopes are for this country in the next 4 years. I've been ending every show this way, so just a couple of sentences. Loopy, what's your dream for America for the next 4 years?
I hope that we can get this COVID under control and that we can get back to life.
And Denise, what about you?
I hope that we have healing and unity, that COVID is under control, that that people can feel free and equal in all regards.
And Dave?
I will echo what Denise just said, healing and unity, and then just add, you know, live your life, but do it with kindness and grace towards other people. And that means wearing your mask. You know, I'm about to head to Hawaii and I'm going to go have a great time, but I'm going to respect the people of that island by wearing my mask, by keeping my distance, and by having a lot of fun, though, in supporting local businesses and restaurants. And I'm just going to do it in the safest manner possible. And everybody, wash your hands and never touch your eyes. Just don't touch your eyes.
Well, Dave Dahlstrom, joining us from Goodyear, Arizona. Thank you, Dave. And thank you for sharing Cindy's life with us as well.
Thank you for allowing me to be on the program.
And Denise Carr with us from Buffalo, New York. Denise, thank you. And thank you for telling us about your father, Clifford, and the kind of person he was. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Loopy Harbster, joining us from Flat Rock, Michigan. Loopy, I'm so glad that you're here with us to share your story. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Next week, folks, it's our last voter roundtable in this long election season. We're going to be talking to folks in North Carolina. So if that's you, what are your hopes and dreams for this country for the next 4 years? Call us at 617-353-0683, 617-353-0683. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
So Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.